Good morning, everybody, and thank you for joining us today. I'm Nancy Houston, Vice President of Community and Governmental Affairs for the Mobile Area Chamber of Commerce. Your chamber is working hard to provide information and resources to help your business with this fast-moving situation. Today's call is muted because of the large number of calls, but we will have an audio recording of the call that we'll post today on our social media channels so you can re-listen or share with your network. If you have any questions for Michael during today's call, please email me at nhouston, that's N as in Nancy, Houston, H-E-W-S-T-O-N, at mobilechamber.com. And we'll do our best to get those questions answered during the call. But if we run out of time, we will certainly get an answer to you after the call. This morning we have Michael Burson, an attorney at Adams & Reese, here to help us understand the SBA's Paycheck Protection Program and the Economic Injury Disaster Loan Program. Michael has extensive experience on Capitol Hill and within various governmental agencies. He formerly served as Director of Government Affairs and Associate General Counsel of the National Small Business Association in Washington, D.C., where he oversaw all legislative activities, including prioritization of issues, development of policy positions, and formulation of strategies to advance small business interests before Congress and the White House. He's experienced in government relations as well as economic development and city, county, and local government law. So we are thrilled to have him today. Michael, thank you for joining us on this Monday morning.
Thank you for having me, Nancy. I really appreciate it. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry, Nancy.
No, that's okay. The floor is yours. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you, everyone, for joining us today. And as Nancy said, if you have any specific questions, please feel free to follow up with her either during the call or after the call, and we'll do our best to get you all responses based on kind of the guidance that we have out now, which SBA just recently issued. They issued guidance that I'll touch on and include in the presentation regarding the PPP program and regarding how affiliation works, which is their SBA has affiliation rules that apply to all of their lending programs. And they issued some guidance late Friday night or late Saturday night on that. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to go ahead and start just with the EIDL program, then go into the PPP program, which I think may be the program that's really of more interest to a lot of folks here on this call. And then I'll, open it up to any questions there at the end. So beginning with the EIDL program, or this is called the SBA's Economic Injury Disaster Loan Program. So the President's recent federal disaster declaration back in March activated this program for the state of Alabama. There was a process that the governor and the state had to go through to make sure it was activated here. Basically, the state had to provide certain information and certifications to the SBA administrator, which then activated or greenlit the EIDL program, the EIDL program for the state. The EIDL program, like the PPP program, proceeds cannot be used to replace sales or lost profits. That's something that's very important. We've got a lot of questions on, and I'll kind of go into the details of what the loan proceeds can be spent on later, but I wanted to mention that up front, that it applies to both programs. Essentially, EIDL loan proceeds can only be used for working capital that's necessary to enable the business or the nonprofit organization to alleviate the specific injuries as a result of COVID. And again, I'll just go into some details on that here in just a couple of minutes. With regard to the EIDL program, right now in the last bill, COVID-3, they appropriated $10 billion available for the EIDL program. And again, it's active now. As far as eligibility is concerned, EIDL is available to those small businesses and now nonprofits as well. That were already eligible for SBA's loan programs prior to the COVID pandemic. So generally speaking, if you have any specific questions, please let us know. But generally speaking, all business concerns that employ less than 500 employees, as well as independent contractors and self-employed individuals are eligible for EIDL. But important to note, they have to have been, you have to have been in business since January 1st, 2020 to be eligible for this specific portion for EIDL. The loan amount, max loan amount is $2 million. Interest rate for small businesses is set at 3.75%. Nonprofits is 2.75%. Cap at that. 30-year term, principal payments are automatically deferred for 1 year. You know, the process, exactly how that's going to work is something that SBA is working on internally, but they're going ahead to be deferred automatically for a year, and that's just your principal payments. Several things SBA has done for this program, and fairly similar to the PPP program as well. The SBA has what's called a credit availability elsewhere test. This has been significantly relaxed for this program, as have the ability to repay guidelines. So over the past years, this EIDL program has been active for a long time. SBA, when the law was first passed, established a credit availability test where they originally would require essentially a denial from your bank, a denial letter from your bank to provide and prove that you are not able to receive credit elsewhere. That term is kind of evolved over time. You know, generally, SBA no longer requires that particular denial letter, and they've also significantly relaxed those here. You know, it's my understanding that probably, you know, 99% of the businesses that apply for an EIDL loan are going to ultimately be found eligible for those loans. Unlike some, you know, your traditional SBA loans where you're talking about your traditional 7As or 504s or no collateral is required to secure the loan and no personal guarantees are required unless the loan amount is over $200,000. If it's over $200,000, they are going to require that personal guarantee. With EIDL funds, you know, this is something I'll mention again when discussing PPP. You know, a lot of the questions we've got is, you know, can we apply both for EIDL and PPP? The answer is yes. However, there's no double dipping. So you cannot use your EIDL loan proceeds and your PPP loan proceeds for the same purposes. So, for example, if you wanted to bifurcate it and, you know, EIDL would just cover your, you know, your rent or your utilities, and PPP would just cover your payroll, you know, that is, it's our understanding that is currently permitted. Going into the acceptable uses for EIDL, these are going to be fairly similar to, not exactly the same, but fairly similar to what's in PPP. Again, it's just fixed costs, really. So, you know, your mortgage, your rent, your lease payment, payroll costs, including benefits, are included under EIDL. Also under EIDL is your accounts payable and other bills that you would not be able to pay but for this COVID pandemic and this particular disaster. As far as loan forgiveness, this is a pretty big distinction between EIDL and PPP. That's why PPP is really can be more attractive. And, you know, these decisions are going to be internal business decisions, but, you know, there's no loan forgiveness under EIDL. There is loan forgiveness under PPP so long as the funds are spent in accordance with the provided guidance, and we'll get into those for PPP in a second. You know, however, you know, saying that there's no forgiveness, with EIDL, one thing that COVID-3 did is now SBA can provide an emergency grant, EIDL grant, in conjunction with your EIDL loan, your EIDL loan application, which is forgiven. Although that grant must be used for the following expenses: paid sick leave for employees who are unable to work because of COVID, maintaining a payroll to retain those employees during the periods of this business interruption or these substantial slowdowns that we're all finding ourselves in, meeting increased costs to obtain certain goods or certain materials because of supply chain interruptions or disruptions. That's something that we're starting to hear a lot from folks throughout our footprint on, that they're starting to see increased costs due to that. EIDL proceeds can be used for that. Rent or mortgage payments. Also, other payments on fixed debts or obligations that cannot be paid because of the revenue losses from the disaster. So there's kind of the distinction is that these proceeds can't be used to essentially replenish or to cover lost sales or lost revenues, but you can cover the payment on certain fixed debts or other obligations that you haven't been able to pay because of these lost revenues. Now going into the PPP program, general overview, COVID-3, this is a brand new program that's being stood up. What they're doing is, in order to try to get these funds out as quickly as possible, and I'm sure a lot of you have over the past, I guess since Friday, but maybe even a little before then, started hearing from your banks and your lenders, the way they rolled out some of these regs, and it's I think the staff, both on the Hill and at SBA, are working absolutely as quickly as possible, and I think they're doing as best a job as they can. But the guidance they issued last week is left a lot of lenders looking, with some uncertainty, looking for some answers that weren't provided in that guidance. The guidance that was issued was interim final guidance. And what that means is that it's effective immediately. Normally, guidance, there's usually a 30-day, and there still is with this one, a 30-day comment period. However, in order to get these funds out as quickly as possible, they've made this guidance effective immediately. In addition to that guidance, they issued an application, I believe it was Treasury, to actually put out the application. It's be careful. Make sure you have the most recent version of the application for the PPP program. There were three versions circulating. So make sure you can definitely go to the Treasury, U.S. Department of Treasury's website. They have the most up-to-date application. I think we're on our third version right now, unless there was another one kind of slipped in there somewhere. So under this, the PPP program, which again is being run essentially through the SBA 7A program. So they're using the rails of the 7A program and the current infrastructure of that program to push out roughly $349 billion in aid to small businesses. Now the issue that, SBA is unfortunately dealing with is that the 7A program, and a lot of the other programs, even the disaster programs at SBA, are not structured to push out this much money this quickly. With other disasters, they've generally been more geographically specific. We're talking about our Katrinas, our Sandys, even the wildfires out in California. But this is one, across the country that they're dealing with. So they're going to be pushing out, just through this PPP program, I think roughly between 10 to 15 times as much money as they pushed out for the entire 7A program all of last year. So that kind of gives you a little perspective on what they're dealing with, and I think they're doing as best a job as they possibly can. But the likelihood, I think Mnuchin or somebody said, we want this money going out within a week. Some of the smaller banks and some of the other smaller institutions may be able to do that, but I know that for some of the larger folks, they're having an issue. Just I think internally from a manpower perspective, having enough people familiar with this program and working on this program to turn these applications around. And again, they're still waiting for answers from SBA. So basically what the PPP program is going to do, they're going to provide $349 billion to small businesses. These are, unsecured loans that are intended to cover payroll and other eligible expenses. I'll get into some of what's included in payroll and what those eligible expenses are here in a second. The time period, this is the applicable time period, is February 15th, 2020 through June 30th, 2020. 100% federally guaranteed loans. The terms are going to be the same for all borrowers. So regardless of which lending institution you go to, all the terms for these loans are going to be the same. They've also done some things with the regs to make it easier on these lending institutions to start lending money. One thing is that they are, essentially held harmless. What the lending institutions are going to be able to do is they're going to be able to rely on that application. And within that application, as you can see, there are a number of different things you have to self-certify. So I just want everybody to be careful when you go through that application, and I'm sure your lender will do this with you as well. You're certifying under penalty of perjury that all the conditions that you're checking off essentially are met, or that you have a good faith belief that they're being met. So that's one thing that, I think everyone should be careful in submitting an application to realize. What they've done is they've made these loans retroactive back to February 15th, 2020. So if a small business has laid off workers, you can rehire them and still avail yourself of the PPP program. We're still waiting on, with respect to that, still waiting on some guidance regarding loan forgiveness. There's the initial interim reg provided a little clarity on that, but not much. So we're expecting some additional guidance on the actual loan forgiveness aspects of it. You know, your lenders are going to be your financial institutions. This is something I didn't mention a second ago. With EIDL, you're going to be applying directly to SBA. With PPP, your lenders are your financial institutions, so your banks, your credit unions, and other approved lenders. There's another category for special lenders. So if anybody is interested in becoming a special lender, you can actually apply to, you have to meet the conditions, but you have to apply to SBA and Treasury to get that approval. So what they're trying to do essentially with these PPP loans is it's a bridge loan. Think of it like a bridge loan. You know, this is to help keep people on the payroll. I mean, the reason why it's called the Paycheck Protection Program is to keep these employees on your payroll and paid, and for those who've unfortunately haven't been laid off previously, to bring them back on. So as of this past Friday, April 3rd, eligible small businesses and sole proprietorships were able to apply. You know, this varies based on the lending institution. You know, late Thursday night, we were getting emails. I think we got one from Chase Bank essentially saying, you know, we're not going to be able to lend. You know, there are other ones, other banking institutions that now are taking your information down. They just do not have, and going back, they don't have the specificity that's necessary for them to start putting applications together. And, you know, there are questions regarding the notes. Do they use the same form notes as SBA has used in the past, or are they allowed to use their own notes? There are all these types of questions that are kind of coming up with a lot of lending institutions across the country. Now, as of April 3rd, small businesses and sole proprietorships can apply. As of April 10th, independent contractors and self-employed individuals will be able to apply, and that again will vary based on the lending institution. And, you know, that's something I want to take a second and stop with. So with the 2 dates, with small business sole proprietorships and then independent contractors and self-employed individuals, independent contractors cannot count towards your employee numbers for purposes of payroll calculations for determining your line. So that's a question we've gotten from a lot of people is, can I count my independent contractors in my employee count? Because a lot of small businesses do essentially count those as such. But for purposes of PPP loan proceeds and calculating them out, you cannot count them in your employee count. So that's why they've actually have a separate date and they're allowing independent contractors to apply for their own PPP loans. And, you know, there are various other kind of questions that kind of follow that. I'm happy to help and help navigate those as much as you can. With regard to eligibility, the PPP program, it's available to all those small businesses that were already eligible for Small Business Administration loans prior to COVID. You know, generally all small business concerns that employ less than 500 employees as of February 15th, 2020, and small businesses that meet the SBA small business industry-specific size standards. If you have any questions, those are linked to on SBA's website. It's very helpful, very easy to find, but if you have any questions, please let us know. In addition to PPP being eligible to small businesses and those folks who are already previously eligible for SBA loan programs, 501c3 nonprofits that employ less than 500 employees are also eligible, and then again, the sole proprietors, your independent contractors, or self-employed individuals. You know, the eligibility also applies, and I'll kind of get into this in a little bit regarding waiver and affiliation rules, but also applies in limited circumstances to certain industries where they employ more than 500 employees, but there are no more than 500 employees at a given physical location. This is for those businesses that start with their NICS code of 72. So generally your food service businesses, your restaurants, and your hotels. Also, businesses assigned a franchise operator code from SBA are also eligible. And it's important to note, similar to but not exactly like the EIDL program, which, you know, you had to be in business back in January, with PPP, you have to be in business since February 15, 2020 and paid taxes on your employees or other independent contractors. So you have to satisfy not only the general small business eligibility requirement, unless you've been given that waiver because your NICS code starts with 72, but you also have had to been in business since February 15, 2020. Getting into a little bit of the criteria on the loans, loans are capped at the lesser of $10 million or 2.5 times your average monthly payroll cost and measured over the 12-month preceding period from the loan origination date. And I'll get into here in a second and exactly how those are calculated. One question we've gotten a lot is from, especially in this area, is seasonal businesses. So seasonal businesses may use the period from February 15th, 2019 to June 30th, 2019, or from March 1st, 2019 to June 30th, 2019, to calculate their monthly payroll for purposes of determining loan amount. Also, we've gotten a question a lot from businesses, who may not have, who may be much newer than that. And you can, it's my understanding and our understanding, you can start, in January and use some of those figures to help project such. Interest for this one was originally capped at 4%. Treasury then came out and said it's actually 0.5% as of now with the final regs. Interest is settled in at 1%. So really, this is essentially, while it's called a Paycheck Protection Loan Program, at 1% interest rate and with up to 100% of your loan proceeds and principal and any accrued interest being forgiven, this is essentially acting as a grant program for small businesses. And especially if, with a max of, the lesser amount of $10 million or 2.5 times your average monthly payroll cost, this is a fantastic opportunity and as a program, something like, I've never seen before at SBA. So this is a fantastic, I say loan, but it's essentially almost like a grant opportunity for small businesses that I think everyone should be taking a hard look at and speaking with, whether it's your CPAs, your lenders, or such on it. Originally, under PPP, loan payments were deferred for at least 6 months, but not, could not be deferred for more than a year. Since then, if SBA has issued guidance and said there is a 6 month deferral, you're going to go ahead and start making payments after that 6 month deferral runs. Unlike traditional SBA loans, borrowers do not need to establish that they are unable to secure credit elsewhere. Businesses will not need to establish credit worthiness and the ability to repay. Rather, what SBA is going to look at is they're going to look at the relevant inquiry is going to be whether you were in business as of February 15th, 2020, and were you paying your employees. Similar to EIDL, unlike traditional loans, SBA loans, no collateral is going to be required to secure the loan, no personal guarantees here are going to be required. Also, like EIDL, I touched on this for a second ago, but there's no double dipping. So you can't use your PPP and your EIDL loan proceeds for the same purposes. And you cannot particularly with PPP, you cannot use your PPP proceeds to pay mandated sick leave under the Families First Act, which is the Families First Coronavirus Response Act, FFCRA. Rather, you have to use the tax credits that were provided under that new paid sick leave laws. Those are going to be your sole source of reimbursement for those types of expenses. So that's important to note as well. And I just touched briefly on that. So with regard to eligible uses, so payroll costs are going to include your employee compensation, so your salaries, your commissions, your tips, group health care benefits during the periods of paid sick leave, medical or family leave, as well as the insurance premiums associated therewith. Mortgage interest payments are going to be an eligible use, but only if the mortgage was in place prior to February 15th, 2020. Similar to that, rent, but the rent must have been in effect, that lease must have been in effect prior to February 15th, 2020, along with utilities. But similar to that, the service had to have been begun and started prior to that February 15th, 2020 effective date. Also included in this is any interest on any other debt obligations if the obligation was incurred before February 15th, 2020. Couple things I do want to mention about payroll costs and about what is not included. Annual salary more than $100,000 per year. So in your payroll calculations, and there has been some confusion on this, and there, we've sought clarity, and we think we have some clarity on it. Essentially, you can include salaries up to that $100,000 mark, but anything above the $100,000 mark cannot be included. Also, FICA and other income withholding taxes cannot be included, and then your sick leave, which I mentioned a second ago, that's already being provided for by the Families First Act. I'm going to get now into a little bit of the aspects of the loan forgiveness. Again, SBA is going to be issuing further guidance on the loan forgiveness, so I'm just What I'm going to give you now is essentially what's been included in the bill and what was referenced in the interim final reg that came out. As far as loan forgiveness, generally speaking, the amount of the loan forgiveness, it can be basically up to that 100%. The following will count towards your loan forgiveness. So your payroll cost during the 8 weeks following the loan origination date, the mortgage interest, but only if that property was purchased before the February 15th, 2020 date, rent, but again, only if the lease was in place before February 15th, 2020, and then utility payments during the 8 weeks following the loan origination date. So the amount of forgiveness, and this is important to note, is also subject to a reduction in your workforce headcount. And they're going to use, what they're going to do is they're going to compare that to the relevant period from the previous year. So if you've already laid off employees, you will not be penalized if you bring them back. Your loan forgiveness amount may also be reduced if you've reduced any of your employees' compensation during that relevant period when compared to the previous year. I think I saw in the regs that you cannot reduce an employee's compensation more than 25% if that employee makes less than $100,000 during the year, or that's going to be held against you. You're essentially going to be penalized for that just in your forgiveness amount of your loans. Employers are going to need to fill out paperwork to establish the amount of loan forgiveness. A lot of that's going to be provided in that subsequent guidance. What you're going to be doing when you're applying and using this application form that's currently available, your lender is also going to ask for your payroll numbers and things like that, which should hopefully be readily available. Any amounts remaining after the forgiveness must be repaid no later than 2 years after being borrowed, so it's a 2-year term. The legislation had actually allowed for up to a 10-year term. But SBA has limited that to 2 years as of, I think, April 2nd, when those regs came out. They're trying to make this serve essentially as a bridge loan. Another thing to point out, in the guidance, 75% of your loan proceeds, only 75% needs to go to your payroll expenses. So you can spend no more of your loan proceeds, 25% of your loan proceeds on other eligible costs, such as rent, utilities and mortgages, interest on mortgages, excuse me. I know we're getting close to time. I'm going to touch real quick, briefly, on some of the affiliation rules and how they're applicable to the Paycheck Protection Program. This is something that's come up a number of times, so that's why they pushed out guidance very quickly. I think it came out either late Friday night or late Saturday night, if I'm not mistaken. So affiliation rules, speaking generally, for purposes of determining the number of employees of an applicant, under the PPP program, the applicant is going to essentially be considered together with their affiliates. So concerns and entities or affiliates of each other when one controls or has the power to control the other, or there's a third party or parties control or have the power to control both. It does not matter, though, whether or not that control is actually exercised, so long as the power essentially exists. So if any of the following tests are met, then affiliation for an applicant for the PPP program has been met. Affiliation based on ownership. So based on ownership, for determining affiliation based on equity ownership, a concern is affiliate of an individual concern or other entity that owns or has the power to control more than 50% of the concern's voting equity. And just for brevity's sake, I'm just going to run through the rest of these four tests quickly. Affiliation arising under stock options, convertible securities, and other agreements to merge. Affiliation based on management. So where essentially the CEO or president of an applicant or concern also controls the management of one or more other concerns. They're going to find affiliation there. Also, affiliation is based on identity. So it arises when there is an identity of interest between close relatives or with identical or substantially identical businesses or economic interests. So please keep those things in mind as you're applying to it. One interesting thing, though, and I'll point this out, and then I have one other thing I'm to mention, then the number will be finished, is the recent regs that came out regarding affiliation is something that I think certainly going to help a lot of people. So there was actually a religious exemption from the affiliation rules for PPP. So the relationship of a faith-based organization to another organization has been deemed not to be considered as affiliation with the other organization if that relationship is based on a religious teaching or belief or otherwise constitutes a part of the exercise of religion. So that's an important, very important exception that opens it up, and that waiver grants it and opens it up for a lot more of those related institutions and entities. You know, what the original rules also did, it waived affiliation rules for PPP for any business concern, again, that has not more than 500 employees at a specific location as of the date which the loan is dispersed. And it was found that North American Industry Classification Systems Code, or NICS code, beginning with 72. I think I am out of my time, but if there are any other questions, I'm happy to help provide some answers. Nancy, if you wanted to kind of get all those questions together, I'm happy to chat with you afterwards.
Perfect. Yes. Thank you, Michael. That was a lot of information that you squeezed into the last 30 minutes. We did get several questions though during the course of the call. So I will get those to you, and then those of you who sent those will get answers back to you. And if anybody else has questions, please don't hesitate to send those to me at Nancy. I'm Nancy Houston, and my email is nhouston, nhewston@mobilechamber.com. But again, this call was recorded, and we'll post it to the Chamber's social media channels. I did want to point out that the Chamber does have the latest applications on our website. Michael, you had mentioned during your presentation that those have changed several times, so we do have the latest applications on our website, and those links will be included in our post about with this call's recording. We will be back same time tomorrow, and we'll continue doing those all week, so please let us know how we can be of service to you. Thank you all for your membership in the Mobile Chamber of Commerce. Have a great day.